are you?
Lily always sounded relaxed, regardless of what was going on. She was just one of those people who seemed to take things in her stride. Maybe she was a wreck inside, but on the outside, she was the very definition of chill. Driving home. I'm in your neighborhood. Do you want to have coffee? I have about an hour to kill, and I couldn't think of anyone better to kill it with. Francis took a right. You mean no one else answered their phone? No, Lily said. You were the first. You had the advantage of proximity. I would have had to call Ann Porter next, so I'm glad you picked up. I like her, but she always makes me feel underdressed. Usual place? Yeah, see you in 10. Well, there you go. One minute it all seemed bleak and vexing, and the next you were going to have coffee. Thank God for friends. And caffeine. The usual place was one of those Belgian chain cafes that always made Frances feel chic and European. She walked to the back room and immediately spotted Lily. Her friend was very pretty, not that she seemed to notice. She waved enthusiastically, and Frances half ran over to give her a hug. Dude, I was so glad to hear your voice. Frances settled down and ordered a latte and a chocolate croissant. Oh yeah? Why? Lily grinned. Not that I don't want you to be happy to hear from me, but what's up? The croissant arrived and Frances took a bite. Nothing, of course. How are the kids? Lily had two daughters, the eldest of whom was in the same fourth grade class as Milo. Well, Annabelle is fine, although I'm starting to see a little mean girl action from the other kids. Claire is as chirpy as usual, although I can see her becoming more, I don't know, normal. Frances shook her head. I think you're misreading. That kid is never going to be normal. Lily's younger daughter was a riot. Who's being mean to Annabelle? Lily shrugged. They seem to take turns. It's all about little groups and who's your friend and who isn't. She shuddered. It's hideous. She took a sip of coffee. But anyway, tell me about your whatever it is. Frances looked around the room. There were at least two familiar faces there, which wasn't surprising. She came in maybe three times a week and often saw the same people. They weren't at the point of knowing each other's names, but should they be caught in a zombie apocalypse or something, they would naturally clump together. They nodded at each other. They would even nod at each other outside of the cafe context. It was only a matter of time before one of them would step forward, stick out a hand, and introduce themselves. Maybe it would even be Francis. Hey, Earth calling. Lily's tone was wry. You're drifting off. Are you drinking? Is that it? Are you hammered right now? Frances laughed. No, but I have noticed my mind wanders a lot. Does yours? Lily nodded. All the time. The other day it went to the zoo without me. Frances made a face at her. I'm a little worried about Ava. Her grades are dropping, and I just found out she quit a load of extracurriculars without telling me. She shrugged. I'm used to being consulted, but maybe I've been laid off without even realizing it. A kind of once I was the student, now I am the master kind of thing? There was a pause, and Lily grinned. Sorry, it all goes back to Star Wars for me, you know that. Yeah, said Frances. But it is kind of like that. Like when you're teaching them to ride a bike, and you're running along behind, and then suddenly you feel them get it, and they glide away, and that's something you'll never get to do again. Lily gestured to the waitress who came over. Can I get another chocolate croissant? And another latte, thanks. The waitress looked at Frances, who shook her head. Lily continued. But you want her to be independent, right? You want her to make decisions for herself. Of course. She's 14, it's time for her to do it. I just didn't think she would take over so suddenly and completely. I'm worried that there's something going on, and now I don't know how to bring it up. She told Lily about running into Ava at school. Lily frowned at her. Well, it doesn't sound like you'll need to bring it up. She'll give you the third degree the minute she gets out of school. She smiled at the waitress and took a bite of her second croissant. Jesus, why do they make these things so delicious while at the same time offering kale salad and green smoothies? How am I supposed to pick that over this? She paused and reached across the table, brushing at something on Francis's arm. You have a mark on your arm. Doodling on yourself again? Francis looked at where she was pointing and smiled. I never told you that story? Lily raised her eyebrows and shook her head. That's where my brother stabbed me in the arm. No. I'm pretty sure you never mentioned that. I didn't even know you had a brother. I don't really have him anymore. He died. I'm sorry. So am I. Francis looked at the tiny blue-gray dot on her inner arm. He was younger than me, and I was supposed to be helping him with his homework. He was being his usual pain-in-the-ass self and procrastinating using every trick in the book, including sharpening his pencil to the point where the lead was longer than the wood. Do you know what I mean? Lily nodded. Sure. And I kept bugging him and getting more and more impatient, and eventually he stabbed me in the arm with his pencil. Seems a little harsh. Worse still, the lead was so long it just stuck there, standing straight up, as a single drop of blood oozed out and ran down onto the kitchen table. It wasn't really painful, but it was visually pretty impressive. What did he do? Howled and begged me not to tell Mom. And did you? Of course. And the lead broke off in my arm and left this mark, which, now that I look at it closely, is starting to fade. She touched it with her finger, her skin totally smooth and soft on her inner arm. He died a few years after that, but I always think of him when I see this. An image of her brother gazing in horror at the blood jumped into her head and she smiled. She looked up at Lily and wanted to change the subject. Hey, I heard you're dating someone, is that true? Lily had lost her husband in a car crash. Francis knew that, but she didn't know much more than that. It had happened before they had met, when the kids were very small, she thought. All these losses, all in the past, but still present every day. Lily made a face. I guess so. I don't know. Yes, I am, I think. Not really. Francis laughed. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up. It's really early. It just started over the summer. I don't know if I'm ready. What's his name? Tell me details. Lily sighed. His name is Edward. He's Dutch. Is he stoned all the time? No, nor does he wear clogs. He's a gardening teacher. I find him very, very attractive, but I just don't know. The kids like him. Well, that's good. Clearly, Lily didn't want to talk about this. What else is new? Lots, for once. I went freelance. I think my sister is going to get married, and the dog has worms. Again? It was 11 when they left the cafe, and it felt as if they'd solved the world's problems, if not their own. Frances considered what she could get done in the hour, and eventually went to the grocery store. Default setting. Grocery shopping. Frances and Iris had once spent an entire afternoon planning out 3 months' worth of meals so that they could be sensible about shopping and not spend so much money on food. It didn't seem right that they had cupboards full of cans and freezers full of food, yet never knew what to make for dinner. Yes, a first-world problem, but still a problem. Having made these extensive meal plans, they both felt fantastically free to think about more important and useful things than groceries, but fell off the wagon about 3 weeks into it. Why was it so fucking hard to be consistent about anything? Literature and popular culture were full of montages of people sticking to things, working out every day, practicing in leg warmers, carrying around railroad ties, clambering over obstacles. Yet consistently sticking to a meal plan was apparently beyond her. Drenched in self-loathing, Frances pushed the cart around the store, hating herself for picking up Oreos rather than baking from scratch, for choosing Honey Nut Cheerios rather than plain, because plain was over once her kids tasted Honey Nut, for buying wasteful and doubtless polluting tampons instead of wearing some kind of weird internal plastic cup thing. She threw in a big container of salad, then immediately took it out. It would just rot in the fridge, and when she threw it away, she would feel guilty for the waste of the food itself, and for the wasted labor of the poor, underpaid fucker who picked it. It was all very well educating oneself about the trials and problems of the world, but it then became impossible to just blindly go on. At some point, she'd decided to swallow the red pill, and the rabbit hole just got deeper and deeper. She decided to roast a chicken for dinner, then stood over the chicken section for 2 minutes, trying to decide whether a vegetarian-fed chicken was better than an all-natural chicken. How could a chicken not be all-natural? Artificial hips? The butcher counter guy appeared next to her. "Which of these chickens had a better life, do you think?" she asked, 100% confident he was going to think she was a fucking idiot. Silently, he took pity on her and pointed at one marked humanely raised. She picked it up and smiled gratefully at him.
"It's more expensive," he said.
"That's okay," she replied. "I'm paying more so I don't feel guilty." He turned and walked away, presumably so she wouldn't see him rolling his eyes. He probably couldn't even be bothered to do that. Frances looked at the chicken, which, humanely raised or not, was still dead. She occasionally went vegetarian for a while, usually because she'd unintentionally watched part of some hideous documentary about factory farming, but she found it shamefully hard to stick to. Instead, she subscribed to the one bad day theory of meat consumption. As natural a life as possible, filled with open skies, fresh grass, friends, and respect. And then one really bad day, you were killed, as humanely as possible. She realized and recognized that this was utterly crap on her part. She loved animals so much, and would cry at those documentaries and genuinely feel grief. But it would fade. Was she callous, lame, or just lacking in imagination? Then she headed back to the vegetable section, looking for potatoes that had been grown in earth that was free from pollutants, but which retained their beneficial bacteria, or whatever the hell it was she was supposed to care about these days. "Fuck the microbiome," she thought. "I can barely balance my checkbook, let alone my invisible flora." She got home, piled the bags on the counter, checked the message light, nothing. The dishwasher needed emptying. The trash bags needed changing, let the dogs out, needed to pee, and then started unloading. As usual, she had bought several of something she already had several of, and forgotten to buy several things she had none of. You would think after 4+ decades on the planet, she'd be able to remember the difference between a kitchen roll and a toilet roll, but she invariably had none of one and enough of the other for a nuclear winter. She also tended to either have 4 tons of pasta, or half a packet of elbows, 3 tins of anchovies or artichoke hearts or capers, none of which she used very much, and no tuna at all, which she used once or twice a week. She would run out of coffee filters one painful morning, then keep buying them every time she went to the store, until eventually she had 4 large boxes and finally understood that she had enough. Then she'd assume she had enough of them forever, would stop buying them completely, and would eventually run out again at the worst possible moment. Why was this so hard? Walking out of the kitchen, she looked at her house as if seeing it in a catalog, and decided if it were a catalog, it would be called House Hopeless. There were drifts of clutter in every corner, like sticks and leaves in the edges and eddies of a stream. Half-finished craft activities, library books that had become so overdue it would have been cheaper to buy them in the first place. Invitations to parties that had taken place 3 years prior. Then, of course, there were the epic Pinterest fails of an actual life. A mantelpiece where she'd attempted a curation of photos and keepsakes, which for 3 days had been photo-ready, but then had been overtaken by school forms and Fisher-Price little people, and the registration sticker for Michael's car, which didn't need to go on for another month, and would be every single place she looked until she actually needed it, at which point it would have fallen into a crevice in the Earth's crust and be lost forever. And everywhere, everywhere, single socks and dog hair. Oh well. 10. Sarah had gone to work, and Iris had the house to herself. There was only so much tidying she could do before wanting to slam her hand in a drawer with boredom, so she called her mother. Sometimes her mother was helpful, sometimes not, but she was always there, at least. Her diabetes kept her largely housebound, now that her feet were so messed up. Iris's dad had died a few years earlier, and her mother's life had changed in ways she hadn't fully processed herself. "Hey, baby." Her voice was a little tired, but basically happy to hear from her daughter. "How's my favorite grandson?" "Your only grandson." "True, but irrelevant. Although if you would only give me another, maybe it would take the pressure off him." "Think of your child, Iris." She was joking, but only mildly. "I'd love another child, you know that, Mom. It just isn't happening right now." "What does Sarah say?" Iris clicked on the kettle and went to get herself a mug and a tea bag. "She doesn't. We haven't talked about it." "Why not?" Her mother got a sharper note in her voice. "Are you fighting?" Her mother hadn't really had a problem with Iris being gay, and was on some level relieved her daughter wasn't going to have to deal with the perfidy of men, as if women were immune from perfidy. She was definitely thrilled to be a grandmother, but sometimes she had to defend her daughter's choices to the other women at her Catholic church. It helped a lot that Sarah and Iris had been married as long as they legally could be, and that their marriage was happy. Iris sometimes felt gay married couples were being held to an unreasonably high standard, as if one failure would doom the entire category. Marriage had so little to do with the bedroom, and so much to do with every other room in the house. Conversations around the kitchen table, discussions about toothpaste and toilet paper, decisions about pets and children and car insurance. How you chose to physically please each other was such a small part of it, but it got all the press. When she and Sarah had been planning their wedding, Iris had been struck by how much attention was paid to getting married, and how little to staying married. Entire magazines were devoted to centerpieces and whimsical take-home trinkets. But where were the articles about getting used to the smell of each other's poop? Where was the advice on how to end an argument about who was sicker when you both caught the same cold? Or how to decide which one of you got up at night for the baby? Or how to agree to put an old and suffering pet to sleep? Similarly, when she was pregnant, there was such attention paid to labor and delivery, and so little to the first 3 months afterward, which made the pain of an episiotomy seem like a walk in the park. Split your vagina like a melon? Sure, but what about taking the first shit afterward? What about 90 nights with 2 hours of sleep, and the argument all couples have in the second week when you realize this fucking baby is never leaving, and all the help you have is that useless person over there? Let's get 500 words on that, motherfucker. Iris realized her mother was still waiting for an answer. "Because I haven't found the right moment to bring it up. She seems really happy right now, and I guess I'm scared that if I ask her and she says no, that I'm not sure what I would do." Her mother made a noise that was hard to describe. A sigh mixed with a click of the tongue, and an ageless expression of resignation. "What could you do?" "Not sure. That's why I haven't brought it up." She poured the hot water over the tea bag and watched the gossamer pyramid collapse. Her mother asked, "How's Francis?" Iris smiled. "Same as ever. Happy." "Did she lose the weight?"
Iris rolled her eyes, but answered her mother anyway.
"No, I don't think so. She doesn't look any different."
She waited for her mother to comment on how skinny Francis used to be. It was as predictable as sunrise.
"She used to be so skinny, didn't she?"
"She did, yes. But she had kids."
"Sure, but we all have kids. You have kids. You're still skinny."
Iris walked over to the kitchen table and sat down. Roscoe threw himself down next to her.
"I was never skinny, Mom. And I only have one child. She has three. I had four. I kept my figure."
"You're not being very supportive. That's your favorite niece you're talking about."
"You should hear what I say about my least favorite."
She laughed.
"How's that husband of hers? Still drinking too much?"
"You're a horrible gossip."
"If you're talking about relations, it's not gossip. It's family history."
Iris bent to stroke her dog, who never repeated anything about anyone.
11. As Lily had foreseen, Ava opened her attack before her butt even hit the front seat.
"So, why were you at school?"
She wedged her enormous backpack into the passenger floor space, moving her chair back until it caused Lally to squeak. Francis looked into the rear view. Lally was half asleep, despite the squeak. Milo, Wyatt, and Theo were in the third row, reveling in the extra space because Kate was occupying Lucas's usual seat. He had been picked up by Bill, whom Francis had only glimpsed in the distance. Dentist appointment, which Bill had alerted Francis to the week before. He was very on top of it, Bill was. Maybe Julie had felt unnecessary. Francis looked across at her daughter, whose face was calm enough.
"I just wanted to talk to Jennifer about how you're doing at school."
"You'd already talked to me. Wasn't that enough? Jennifer doesn't know anything."
Her fingers were tapping on the seatbelt, little percussive noises that belied her quiet delivery.
"Is there something to know, Ava?"
In the rear view, she could see Milo's eyes watching her. He couldn't hear very much from back there, but he could read their tone. She dropped her voice.
"Maybe we should talk about this once we get home. We could just sit and chat about how you're invading my privacy. Sure, let's grab a cup of tea and talk it through, shall we?"
Her daughter turned to face the window and said nothing for the rest of the trip. Francis sighed.
"Yes, let's have some tea."
Once they were home and Ava had walked Kate, Theo, and Wyatt down the block to their houses, and Milo had gotten Lally and himself their inevitable bowl of pirate's booty, and had sat down with her for their regulation half-hour of post-school TV, Francis carried two cups of tea up to Ava's room. Ava looked up, apparently surprised to see her mother.
"Oh, are we really going to have tea?"
Fortunately, Francis knew she'd just been sitting there waiting to nonchalantly throw out that line, in the hopes of getting first blood. No dice.
"Yeah, I thought it would be a good idea."
Francis held up the tea.
"But if you don't want to, it's fine."
She looked around the room at the early teenage mix of old horse posters and new rock star posters. Similar hairstyles. The blend of dolls and books and makeup. She understood why parents who lost their children kept their rooms just as they were. Every single thing in this room meant something. Either it meant something to her, or it simply meant something to her because it meant something to Ava. Ava took the tea and resettled herself on the bed, putting her laptop to one side, keeping one of her earbuds in, just in case she needed to do that. "Oh, I've just been distracted by a notification. I'm going to let my gaze drift to the screen to underscore how unimportant this conversation is," move. Again, nice try. "Both earbuds out and close the screen, okay? I want to talk to you.
and I want to hear what you have to say.
Frances suddenly wondered if she should wait for Michael to come home, but it was a bit late to change tack now.
Ava rolled her eyes but complied. Honestly, the eye-rolling thing just had to be developmental. There was no other explanation for its simultaneous appearance in pretty much 100% of tweens and teens all over the world. Three wisps of underarm hair, the first actual pimple and eye-rolling, all at once.
Frances got a brief mental montage of teenage eyes rolling in the spotty faces of multitudinous nationalities, then returned her focus to the kid in front of her.
I went to talk to Jennifer today, because your dad and I were worried that you didn't seem to be bringing the same attention to school as you used to. It's as simple as that.
She smoothed the coverlet, flicking a crumb to the floor.
As simple as, my kid is failing, what are you going to do about it?
Ava pulled her legs up under her, just in case her mother's smoothing hand got too close.
No, you're not failing. You're just not succeeding.
Ava snorted.
Isn't that the same thing?
Frances shook her head.
No, and you understand what I'm saying and what I mean, and there's no point pretending you don't.
Look, lovely. She put her hand on Ava's knee, but her daughter twitched it away, frowning.
We love you and want to help you, that's all. It's our job.
Well, how about I fire you?
Frances smiled. You can't. It's a lifetime appointment. We have tenure.
Ava wasn't smiling.
I never hired you.
We were appointed at birth. Your birth.
How come Milo gets a pass?
He doesn't. But our expectations for him are different from our expectations for you.
He's 10. We expect him to lower the toilet seat after peeing, eat his vegetables. And that's about it.
You weren't that easy on me.
Ava's eyes were glittering, but Frances couldn't tell if it was tears or rage.
Yes, we were.
Easier, maybe, because you were the first and therefore we didn't know how mean we could be. Poor Lally's going to be sweeping chimneys by the time she's 8.
Again, no smile. Usually humor would breach her dam of irritation, her hormonal wall of ice.
Frances waited. Lally gets away with everything.
This was clutching at straws. Ava doted on Lally, and the feeling was mutual. When Lally had been a baby, Ava had been 10, and for a brief period it was only Ava who could stop her from fussing. It had been instant glory, witnessed multiple times by various members of the family, and the connection was still there.
She's 4. Are you suggesting we send her to college? Should Milo be looking for work in the financial sector?
Frances tried to touch Ava again, but she still held herself too far away.
Darling, we want all of you to be happy, and that means different things at 4 than it does at 14. What is it supposed to mean for me then?
Frances could hear an actual question in Ava's voice, rippling across the surface belligerence. She really wondered what happy should mean for her. And Frances remembered that feeling well. She smiled and tried to soften her tone.
We expect you to work hard at school, get enough to eat, get more sleep than you seem to want, and to have a social life. Not a continuous round of parties and sleepovers, because that would mess with the first 3. But fun is allowed, and indeed encouraged.
Frances looked at the face she knew better than her own, watching for clues as to what Ava was thinking. She would get a tiny indentation at the corner of her mouth when she was trying not to cry. She fisted up her hands when she was getting frustrated. She stopped blinking so much when she was about to throw a total shitter. So far, her blink rate appeared normal, but Frances was ready to duck.
And we also want you to tell us what's going on with you, to keep communicating with us. How is that supposed to make me happy? Aren't I allowed a private life?
Of course you are. Everyone is. But we're here to help you, to support you. Like a pit crew,
but without the jumpsuits and awesome worry wheel-changing tools. We can't do that if you don't tell us what you need.
What if I don't need anything?
We all need something. No one gets out of here alone, babe. Why was this so hard? Why was her child resisting her so much, so furiously? When she was small, Frances had been her everything, and now she seemed to resent her mother's very existence.
But what if what I need is to be left alone?
Ava's tiny indentation was there now, at the corner of her mouth. But so was the reduced blinking. The teenager was fighting herself for control. Frances tried something else.
Have some tea. I don't want any fucking tea!
Pause. Crap. Now Frances needed to make one of those snap parenting decisions that she so frequently got wrong. She should have waited for Michael. Should she get angry at the cursing? Should she not? 2 milliseconds, 3 milliseconds, 4 milliseconds. Then don't have any fucking tea. Ava rarely heard her mother swear, except occasionally in the car, and this was startling enough to provoke a small smile. Frances doubled down, as this seemed to have been successful.
How about some fucking cocoa?
Ava's smile widened.
Nah, tea's fine.
Her nascent tears seemed to be under control, and she took a sip and blinked at a normal rate. Frances cheered inwardly, and was tempted to get up and walk away while she was ahead, even though she hadn't done anything except get her daughter to smile and drink tea. Seriously, some days that might be as good as it got. But then she remembered her conversation with Jennifer, and decided to press on. She softened her tone, tried to sound open and non-judgmental.
Jennifer said you've dropped your extracurriculars. What's up there?
In the blink of an eye, the smile was gone. Ava scowled.
What's up? Nothing's up. The extracurriculars were A, boring, and B, time-consuming. And now I'll have more time to do my precious homework. Isn't that what you want?
Frances shrugged. Maybe it was contagious. She'd be rolling her eyes next. If you need more time to do your homework, then it's good you gave yourself that time.
Because I'm too stupid to do my homework in a regular amount of time?
Oh, for fuck's sake. No. You were the one who mentioned homework.
Because that's all you care about.
No, all I care about is you. I thought you liked working on the newspaper.
They got a new editor. It wasn't me. I quit.
Frances was surprised. Because of that? Frances could tell Ava wanted very badly to look at her computer screen and feign indifference. Her hand even drifted toward the laptop.
No, I just didn't enjoy it anymore.
And the animation club?
Flipbook shit. It was stupid.
And the orchestra?
There was a pause.
Frances watched her daughter's face. Ava was clearly trying to remember if she'd said she was doing a rehearsal the previous week, which she had, and wondering whether or not Frances had realized she hadn't been. It was quite the little opera of facial expressions, and in the end the teenager decided to roll the dice.
Yeah, that too. I went last week, but I'm not going to go anymore.
Frances pondered. Should she call her on the lie, wait for Michael to come home and discuss it with him, or let it slide right now but come at it another way? She plunged on.
Oh yeah? Jennifer thought you'd stopped a couple of weeks ago. But you told me you were at rehearsal last week, right?
Ava shrugged and frowned.
Did I?
She reached for her tea, took a sip.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
What did you do instead?
There, that was straightforward.
You know, and I know, that you said you were at rehearsal, and we both know you weren't. So tell me the truth.
Good, right?
Right?
Nothing. Hanging out at the library, I guess. I forget.
Ah, fuck. A sideways bluff. A teenage classic. Maybe I was doing something you wouldn't like. Maybe I wasn't. I don't remember.
How much do you want to push this, parent? We can both walk away at this point. The pothole covered over. Appearances preserved. Wouldn't that be the easier choice? Go on. Let it go.
Frances didn't want to let it go. Her own parents had been masters of the everything is fine here, move along, nothing to see. While at the same time being so incredibly miserable and fucked up, they could barely breathe. They'd never recovered from losing her brother, but everyone in the neighborhood thought they were doing really well, so brave, an inspiration.
I don't believe you. If you quit a couple of weeks ago, then you've been at rehearsal at least twice since then. And I'm pretty sure you stayed late at least one other day.
Frances raised her eyebrows.
What's going on, Ava? I'm not angry. I just want to know what's up.
Ava looked at her mother, a momentary look of hurt almost immediately replaced with anger.
My private life is none of your business.
Yes, it kind of is. I don't need color pictures. A verbal overview is fine. Are you seeing someone? Are you doing drugs? Are you counterfeiting money under the bleachers?
Which was when a gasket blew off, and all the way off.
Ava sat up and pointed her finger, her face flushing.
You think you're funny, don't you? You're always so ready to make a joke, to make it seem like we're all so cool and relaxed here, sharing goals, working as a team, whatever theory you've gleaned from whatever parenting book or podcast you've listened to recently.
Ava looked at Frances with a more than reasonable facsimile of disdain.
You're no different from anyone else's parents, Mom. Just a prying, fat old woman whose own life is essentially over and who needs to run their kids' lives to distract themselves from imminent menopause.
She swung her legs over the side of the bed and stood up, physically escalating the conflict while giving herself space to swing. Frances took a breath and stayed down. At moments like this, she felt sorrow in a way she never experienced in any other context. Sorrow for herself, because let's face it, that shit was hurtful. And sorrow that she had failed at parenting so badly that her child was capable of such cruelty. She knew that Ava saved her harshest words for her. She knew that intellectually. But she also knew that those feelings were real. That at points like this, Ava genuinely didn't like her very much.
That's not true.
And it's very mean. I just asked you a reasonable question. There's no need to make a federal case of it. Just tell me what you were doing and why you're lying to me about it.
Frances really hadn't wanted this conversation to go this way. I don't think of you as a liar, Ava. Please just tell me what's going on with you.
Nothing! I already told you! I hung out at the library and did my homework. There's nothing!
Why did you tell me you were at rehearsal?
Yet another shrug.
Because it was easier than explaining why I wasn't.
Which you still haven't explained.
And who's Piper?
Don't get angry, Frances. The minute you get angry, the minute you raise your voice, you lose the argument, and everyone ends up in tears, and the emotional hangover the next day is such a bastard.
Ava crossed her room to sit in her scruffy, oversized armchair, a fixture since she'd been born. She'd been nursed there, rocked there, read to for years and years. Now it was her own nest, and as she pulled her legs up tightly, Frances could see her thinking hard and trying not to lose the fight. Winning mattered so much to her because she hadn't yet realized that she and Frances were on the same side.
Piper is nobody. Just a girl at school who liked me and doesn't like me anymore.
Liked in the romantic sense?
Ava deepened her scorn, if that were possible.
You'd love that, wouldn't you? If I was gay like Iris, it would be so easy to look cool then. You could just be like, yeah, my kid's gay, it's fine, as long as she's happy. You'd be so accepting and right on about it.
Frances felt her temper rising.
And that would be bad? I should throw you out of the house instead?
No!
Ava tossed her head, looking momentarily like the piebald in the poster above the chair.
Ugh, never mind, Mom. You don't even know what you don't know.
Count to three.
And what about the orchestra? I quit because I wanted to have more time. I wanted to have some space, for crying out loud. I need time to myself. Time that is just mine.
Suddenly, she had tears in her eyes.
Everyone knows where I am and what I'm doing all the time. I have a schedule on the wall. I have organized activities. I have about as much freedom as someone on death's row, and that's pretty much how I feel. I just want to have something private, something only I know, and a little fucking room to breathe.
She turned and buried her face in a pillow that said "No Bad Days" on it in fluffy letters.
I just want you to leave me alone.
Frances reached for her. Ava, from the pillow, desperately.
Mom, I'm not speaking hypothetically. I want you to leave me alone now. Just go away. I hate you.
Frances got up and walked out, almost in tears herself. That went well. To add insult to injury, even though it wasn't needed, Michael was annoyed with Frances for going ahead without him.
I thought we agreed to talk to each other before talking to Ava.
Frances was sitting on their bed, surrounded by dogs as usual. She nodded.
I know, it just... I should have waited. I didn't think it would go that badly that quickly.
They kept their voices low, but Michael wasn't one of those people who needed volume to make his displeasure felt. He wrinkled his eyebrows at her.
Do we even have a theory about why she dropped her extracurriculars? Do we know anything about this Piper girl? Has she ever mentioned her?
Maybe. I don't remember it, but that isn't cast iron. Those first weeks of school are always such a clusterfuck. 3 different schools this year, all new names. I'm surprised I remember who's teaching which kid.
Michael looked at his wife, who was hiding behind Jack and Diane.
He loved her very much, but he found himself increasingly mystified by her relationship with Ava. For his own part, he found the teenage girl living in his house as confusing as the ones he'd gazed at as a teenager. He hadn't understood them then, and barely any of them would even deign to talk to him. When his kids brought home friends, he could never tell them apart. They all looked like critters to him, just fast-moving blurs of hair.
Was that Bella?
He would ask, and Frances or Ava would roll their eyes and say, No, that was Quinn. They're completely different. And he would shrug. He knew his own kids at a vast distance, or from the corner of his eye, and that would just have to do. He loved them unreservedly, especially Ava, who was the most like him. But his conversations with her were completely different from the ones she and Frances had. Early on, Frances had told him something he'd taken very much to heart. You, she'd said, are the alpha man in your daughter's life. You are the model. Every other man in her life will be measured against you, and her relationships will be measured against ours. If you speak to her disrespectfully, she will accept that level of shit from a future boyfriend. She paused and smiled at him. No pressure. He tried hard, and largely spoke to Ava about neutral things, or things they both agreed on. Or sometimes he would just listen to her rattle on about whatever she wanted to rattle on about. He would be sitting there, and suddenly that conversation with Frances would pop into his head, and he would get anxious. Am I being supportive? Am I understanding her and encouraging her to share her thoughts? Would I be okay with a future boyfriend treating her this way? But then he would get so irritated at the thought of some future dickhead treating his daughter badly that he would drift off, and suddenly Ava would be looking at him silently with one eyebrow raised. Doh. But Ava always cut him slack, something she was apparently never prepared to do for Frances. Any tiny error, any thoughtless word, and Ava would be all over Frances like white on rice. He could see how much it stressed Frances out, But then he could also see how her stress made it worse, how caring about Ava too much was preventing her from letting that shit wash over her. He went over and sat on the bed next to her, stroking the dog's heads and reaching for Francis's hand.
Honey, you just need to back off a bit.
I try. Francis pulled her hand away. It doesn't matter what I do, I get into trouble every time we speak. It's like walking blindfolded through a field of, I don't know, exploding things in the ground. Michael frowned.
A minefield?
There was a pause. Yes, a minefield. Jesus, it doesn't help that I'm clearly developing a brain tumor the size of a fucking tangerine. She rested her head on her husband's chest, over the head of Diane, who stuck her nose up and tried to lick their chins. You'd be much better at this than I am, so maybe that would be for the best. Michael hugged her.
Look, I get to be the guest star, the occasional cameo appearance, and unlike on old episodes of Columbo, I don't always have to be the bad guy.
I miss Columbo.
I'm sure they have it on Netflix.
What if it isn't as good as I remember it?
Few things are.
I love you. He grinned above her head.
I know.
Anne was in the bathroom washing her face, the grains dissolving as they always did. Charlie was sitting in the bedroom watching Theo and Kate playing some game or other on the iPad. Anne could tell from Kate's tone of voice that things were about 10 minutes away from going super critical. She'd take 8 of those minutes to finish in the bathroom, and then walk out and pull the irons out of the fire just in time. What a heroine she was. She made a face at herself in the mirror, and heard Theo's voice in the other room say, "Who's Richard?" She clutched the side of the sink, and her hands slipped in the water she was washing her face with. Lurching forward, she almost cracked her head on the mirror. Her blood turned to ice, a phrase she'd never understood until that very second, and she heard Charlie say,
"No idea. Is there something in the game?"
He didn't sound all that interested. Theo sounded puzzled.
"No. He just texted me."
"Please, God."
"What did he say?"
"Are you there?"
"That's all he said? Is that my iPad or Mommy's?"
"I don't know."
"No, really, please, God." Charlie sighed.
"Show me."
Anne looked at her reflection and listened to the last seconds of her old life ticking away. She looked so old, stooping over the sink, her ratty kitten pajamas, a Mother's Day gift from the kids, a little damp on the front, her quivering arms barely holding her up. She looked like a dog about to vomit, hunched, fearful. "No one will ever know." Charlie's voice again.
"It's Mommy's iPad."
He raised his voice.
"Hey, Anne, did you know you're getting texts on the iPad? Does that mean you're not getting them on your phone?"
She could speak. "No idea, babe." She sounded totally normal. "Who is it?"
"I don't know, some guy named Richard."
"Huh. I don't know anyone called Richard. Maybe it's a wrong number."
My voice couldn't sound more innocent and disinterested.
"Can I have it back, Dad?"
There was a tiny pause, and Anne could almost see the small frown on Charlie's face, followed by the usual micro-shrug and casting aside of worry. It was his way. She loved him for it, ironically enough.
"Sure, here you go."
Another pause.
"Nearly time for bed, though, okay?"
Anne rested her forehead against the mirror in the bathroom and willed herself not to smash it there, killing the selfish monster who threatened her family. Instead, she reached for her dressing gown and walked out to lie to their faces. 12. Wednesday morning at 5 o'clock as the day begins. Frances had a Beatles song stuck in her head and sang it under her breath as she blundered into the bathroom, everyone else still sleeping. The dogs followed her, wondering if this morning they would get fed in the bathroom. It paid to keep an open mind. She looked at herself in the mirror, naked and sheet-marked. Not too bad, she thought, turning. Yeah, okay. There were definitely 30 extra pounds. But first thing in the morning, it all tended to hold together. And not fold so much. By the end of the day, having been squeezed into jeans and a bra, and sitting and standing and driving, she looked like a transit map. Lines intersecting pinkly in hubs and spokes. She'd been very slender as a young woman, and clearly remembered looking at herself in a mirror at the age of 24, not an ounce of fat, not a hint that gravity operated on her the same as everyone else, and pledging that if she ever saw even the first hint of cellulite, she wouldn't ignore it, but would work that shit off right away. Frances made a face, remembering the idiocy of her younger self. She'd stayed slender until she had kids, then she'd gained with each pregnancy, and not completely lost. And now she was overweight in her mid-40s, with a muffin top that rivaled any artisanal bakery in town. And did she give a fuck? No. Zero fucks given. Except for every 30 or 40 minutes, when she would catch sight of herself in a store window or mirror, and scowl inwardly, scolding herself for being lazy, fat, unattractive, old, past it, unsexy, uninteresting, invisible yet glaringly, obesely obvious as she lumbered around the world, an insult to the media and good women everywhere. Yeah, apart from those punctuating moments of vicious self-criticism, zero fucks given. But so far this morning, she felt fine. She had the opposite of body dysphoria, maybe. She looked at herself and basically thought she looked good. Body euphoria? It didn't feel that good. The dogs loved her regardless, as they told her continuously, pressing their heads under her hands, gazing up at her. You're fantastic, said their liquid eyes, their waving tails. We just can't get over how terrific you are in every way. We're so glad to have chosen you as our leader. She pulled on her jeans, looked at her mom butt in the mirror. Seriously, how did she suddenly have such a wide ass? What was wrong with her? Then pulled on a sweatshirt which covered it. See? No mom butt here. Just a cool hoodie. Suck it, internal critic. Suck it all the way. She headed down the stairs, the dogs apparently attempting to kill her at every step, pushing behind her in a clattering fall of fur and claws. She saw the cat sitting on the sofa, waiting. Ah, his smooth outline said. I see the servants are awake. Frances put on the coffee, humming, then pulled the dog's dishes from the dishwasher, having let them both out the back door to take a shit she could step in later. Carlton the cat sauntered in, timing his arrival perfectly with Frances putting fresh kibble in his bowl, up on a counter where the dogs couldn't get it. She loved this cat. He was old and predated everyone in the house except Michael. His purr was rusty and only for her, his fur slightly thicker and more matted than it had been when she'd brought him home from the shelter 16 years earlier. The dogs were scared of him, his orange tiger stripes conveying danger just as they should, and he sauntered around the house unmolested. The dogs came back in, the coffee dripped into the pot, the lights were on. She could hear Ava moving around upstairs, facing her own reflection in the bathroom mirror. Frances hoped her daughter saw how beautiful she was, but doubted it. She herself, like every woman she knew, only recognized her own youthful perfection in retrospect, with deep regret not for losing it, but for not seeing it at the time. Frances tried to remember this every time she criticized herself. One day she would be 80, God willing, and she was ready to bet she'd look at herself then and long for the strength and bone density of 46. Frances thought of Anne. A few houses away, she was also wandering around her kitchen, packing lunches, although she could be that mom, the one who assembled them the night before and only did the sandwich at the last minute, to prevent sogginess.
drinking coffee, singing Beatles songs under her breath. Or maybe she was doing a light yoga workout from memory, wearing strappy bamboo yoga wear that didn't leave a mark on her flesh because she didn't have any fat, because she worked it all off fucking a teenager and darting around like the cheating cow she was. Frances chided herself for being a bitch, and Ava came in.
"Morning, lovely," said Frances.
"Yellow," replied her daughter, which was a neutral to medium-friendly response. Frances looked sideways at her, trying to gauge her mood. She'd left her alone the previous night, falling asleep herself before Ava had, which was a pretty common occurrence these days. Had she gotten over her bad mood, or was Frances still on her shit list? Ava had the fridge door open.
"Are you going to the store later?"
"Does the day have a Y in it?" Ava smiled.
"Can you get some more string cheese with the stuff wrapped around it?"
"Prosciutto?"
"Yeah."
She pulled out from the fridge, shutting the door.
"I'm about to eat the last one."
"Sure." Frances made a mental note. Those particular snacks came from a different market from the usual one. She'd have to make a special trip. None of her family noticed the various efforts she made on their behalf, hunting for new foods for them to try, picking up their favorite flavors of this and that, pouncing on the rarities they favored. The Japanese candy, the artisanal brand of root beer, the slightly nicer than usual wine she picked out for Michael, though she didn't like red wine herself. Before there was Pinterest, there were magazines that showed happy women providing beautiful things for their families to enjoy. And despite her intelligence, she was just as much a sucker as anyone else. She wanted a bright yellow pitcher of wooden spoons on her white marble counter. She wanted tall French windows that looked out over green valleys. She wanted a pair of strappy ballet flats that ribboned up her slender calves as she romped about town in artfully shabby dungarees that somehow took 20 pounds off her. Instead, she had a jar of dog-chewed wooden spoons, windows that hadn't been washed since the first Obama administration. And if she'd put on a pair of dungarees, she would have been mistaken for a plumber. A male plumber. However, she did maintain a world-class snack cupboard. Ava came close, leaned over to be kissed, and went back upstairs. Frances listened to her footsteps as long as she could hear them. Stepping outside, she is free. Anne's kids were younger, so maybe she didn't think about losing them as frequently as Frances thought about life after Ava was gone. As her eldest had turned into a teenager, Frances and Michael could feel her getting ready to leave, all her energy pivoting toward the exit. It was palpable, the change in attitude. Sometimes it hurt to think of Ava picking a college, picking a boyfriend, picking a city to move to. And other times it filled them both with pride to think of the young woman she was turning into. "Mind you," Frances thought, as she heard Lally calling her from upstairs. A stick of cheese for breakfast wasn't going to cut it out in the real world. Actually, Anne wasn't doing yoga. She was throwing up and trying not to let anyone hear. She'd filled the toilet with toilet paper and draped a towel over her head to muffle the retching. She'd woken at 4 a.m., the universal hour of regret and recrimination. She knew she'd come dangerously close to being caught, to losing trust she didn't deserve to have. And she knew she had to break it off once and for all. She'd tried before and failed, but that was when she was only fighting her own willpower. Now she knew she was fighting karma, and that bitch carried a big stick and forgot nothing. Light was starting to come in through the skylight above her head as she lay on the floor, the cold tiles flecked with bile. In a moment, her morning alarm would go off, and she needed to get her ass off the bathroom floor and go prevent it from waking Charlie. She had to gather herself, wake the children, make the lunches. She'd been too freaked out to do it the night before, as usual. Put on the kettle for her morning coffee, check the backpacks for things she was supposed to sign, hunt for shoes.
She must pretend it was all okay, that there was no possibility at all that her heart would burst and kill her where she stood. What if she died?